OA1.
Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, you will hear about the many ways high technology makes listening to holiday music easier. We will have more on that story later in the program. But first, scientists at a university in Texas are researching ways to help heal damaged brains. The researchers are combining biology, nanotechnology, and engineering to learn more about how the brain works. Dan Friedel has the story.
A group of researchers at Rice University in Texas are learning how to help the brain heal from serious injuries. Brain cells, called neurons, connect with each other through chemical and electrical signals. They form networks. They use proteins to grow. The researchers want to find out if they can direct the growth of neurons and help them form these important links. If the researchers can understand this process, they think they will be able to help people who have suffered brain injuries stimulate new nerve tissue. Amina Kutub is a bioengineer who studies the brain. She studies what happens when a person's brain does not receive enough oxygen. When the brain lacks oxygen, it is having a stroke. Kutub says scientists used to think brain cells were static. That means everyone was born with a limited number of brain cells, and the number of those cells could never increase. But a lot of new research shows we're able to regenerate nerve cells, she says. Kutub works with an electrical engineer and a biologist on the research team. The goal is to learn how to repair parts of the brain that are damaged in a stroke. Brains can be damaged by a degenerative disease like Alzheimer's disease, or in a traumatic injury, such as getting hit in the head. The networks the brain forms are called neural networks, and they are complex. Preneurons are even harder to understand.
They form very elaborate and beautiful networks, and the different network structures relate to what they do, their function. And what we're trying to do is figure out what are the chemical signals that lead to a particular structure, and in turn, how does that structure relate to the electrical signals you get when you have active neurons?
The Rice research is supported in part by President Barack Obama's $300 million Brain Initiative, which is modeled after the Human Genome Project. Kutub says the research opens up a huge door to better understanding the brain. A small, tropical fish is contributing to the research. It is called a zebrafish because of its stripes. Zebrafish embryos are being used by the research team because their embryos are transparent. That way they can see a living brain work. Kutub says that is not possible with humans. In zebrafish, we can watch the neural progenitor cells become neurons. The research program will create a computer model. That model will help researchers get a better idea of how the brain works. One day, they may be able to provide better treatment for people with brain injuries. I'm Dan Friedel.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA, Learning English. Many high-tech devices and services permit users to listen to their favorite music during the holidays. Kathleen Strzok tells us about some of those sources for holiday music enjoyment.
Technology makes listening to holiday music easier than ever. There are endless sources to help you find your favorite Christmas tunes and many other songs. Today we explore ways to listen to holiday music with high-tech devices. This is the first year you can use Apple Music to find and listen to holiday songs. Apple Music has more than 30 million songs and is available in over 100 countries. Search for holiday music to find playlists, such as Trimming the Tree and Country Holiday. You can also listen to holiday music stations, such as Swingin' Holiday and Latin Holiday. Tell voice assistant Siri to play holiday music. To open the music program on your iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV. The music app will provide holiday playlists and stations. Have an Android phone? Apple Music app is available in the Google Play Store, but not with voice commands. You can also listen to Apple Music on your computer through the iTunes Store or on Apple TV. Apple Music is free for the first 3 months. After that, users must pay a subscription fee. Google Play Music is also in the holiday spirit. Go to the Google Play Music holiday page or app and search for holiday music. Google Play Music is available for free if you don't mind the advertisements. If you do, buy a paid subscription to avoid them. Google Play Music offers more than 30 million songs in 58 countries. The service is available on your computer and through apps on your Android phone and iPhone. Live 365 is an internet radio service. Listen to its music on your computer or mobile device. The service has 158 Christmas music stations, such as Contemporary Christmas, Christmas Breezes, and Classical Christmas. You can also listen to Cornucopia of Chrismica if you want to combine music from Christmas and Hanukkah. Live 365 is free and available around the world. A paid membership is available. It lets you listen to more stations and listen without advertisements. Spotify, another online service, is filled with holiday music. Listen to playlists on Spotify by searching for holiday music. The playlists include Merry Christmas, the best holiday music, Pure Christmas Music, and Pure Holiday Music. Listen to radio stations from around the world with TuneIn Radio. This online service offers stations from all 7 continents, including Antarctica. TuneIn Radio is available on your computer and by using their app. TuneIn Radio is free to online users. In the United States, Britain, and Canada, a paid subscription gives you additional stations without advertisements. YouTube can be an endless source of holiday music. Search for, you guessed it, holiday music to find videos that pair holiday music with scenes of snow, sentiment, and Santa. A popular American tradition for people without a real fireplace is to watch the Yule log on TV or another device. YouTube offers not only the roaring Yule log fire, but music to match. Happy holidays! From VOA Learning English, I'm Kathleen Struck.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars.
Back in 1969, it was the Apollo 11 crew who flew to the moon in a spaceship. School children watched it on small black and white televisions. When U.S. astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Buzz Aldrin stepped foot on the moon, they were the first. Meanwhile, their fellow astronaut Michael Collins circled the moon in their spaceship named Columbia. When Armstrong and Aldrin were done with their walk, they left the lunar vehicle on the moon. They returned to the command module and back to Earth. That part of the spaceship is on view at the Smithsonian's Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. But if you cannot get to Washington, soon you will be able to see Columbia on your computer or your smartphone. Digital scientists are scanning, taking pictures of the inside of the spaceship. They are creating an online model in three dimensions, or 3D. By looking at these photographs, you will be able to see outer space the way the astronauts did. Want your very own Columbia spaceship? You will be able to print a 3D replica of Columbia. Experts say anyone can make a life-sized model, but they expect most people to make smaller models of the 320 by 400 centimeter command module. The Smithsonian calls Columbia a milestone of flight. Scientists are using special 3D technology to scan the inside. They are not allowed to touch or climb inside the module. They use 5 DSR cameras on long arms to take the 50-megapixel photographs. What would it be like to sit inside Columbia and take a look around? All the images will be loaded into software that allows you to look around the module on a computer screen. The user will be able to see the Columbia both inside and out. The Smithsonian says that the 3D technology gives the user ways to see things they cannot see at the museum. A California-based company, Autodesk, is working with the Smithsonian on the project. Paul Sullivan works for Autodesk. He says his company built the interactive 3D viewer just for the Smithsonian. The museum is putting together a new display with the Apollo 11 command module. It is set to open in 2020, but you will not have to wait that long for the virtual digital model. That one will be available online by the middle of 2016. And that is the Environment and Science Report. I'm Ann Ball.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Rutherford Hayes was sworn into office as the 19th President of the United States in 1877. Hayes, a Republican, became president after a disputed election. Representatives of his party and the Democrats met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to let Hayes be sworn in. In return, he agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners. This week in our series, Steve Ember and Richard Rail tell the story of Rutherford Hayes.
Rutherford Hayes was born in Ohio in 1822. He was a good student at Kenyon College and at Harvard Law School. He opened a law office in Cincinnati. When he was 30 years old, he married Lucy Webb. Later, he served as an officer in the Union Army during America's Civil War. He was elected to the United States House of Representatives. He also served as governor of Ohio. In this job, he helped establish the college that became Ohio State University.
Hayes was a Republican. In 1876, he was the party's compromise candidate for president. His opponent in the national election was Democrat Samuel Tilden. Tilden won more popular votes than Hayes. In the American political system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, both the Republicans and Democrats claimed the electoral votes of three southern states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina. So it was not clear at first who had won the presidential election.
Congress appointed a committee to decide the issue. The committee had a Republican majority. It gave the disputed electoral votes to Hayes. He won the election by just one electoral vote. The results came just a few days before the inauguration. Democrats protested that the Republicans had stolen the election. Yet they agreed to accept Hayes as president. In exchange, Hayes and the Republicans agreed to accept Democratic Party policies on several issues. Hayes's administration would deal mainly with national, not international, problems.
At first, people wondered, would President Hayes keep the promises that were made to help him win the election? Most thought he would not. Hayes surprised everyone. In his inaugural speech, he promised to put the country ahead of the party. He said, "He serves his party best who serves his country best." Party leaders told Hayes which men to appoint to his cabinet. He refused and made his own choices. He ordered federal troops to withdraw from South Carolina and Louisiana. The troops had been there since the end of the Civil War. He also helped Southern Democrats establish new governments in their states.
Republican Party leaders criticized President Hayes. Anti-slavery groups also criticized him. They said former black slaves in the South had gained a lot under Republican rule. Now, they said, these black Americans would lose everything. Hayes did not agree. He had received promises that the new Democratic state governments would protect the rights of black Americans. It was not to be. White Democrats kept political control in some southern states for many years. They often denied civil rights to black citizens. Only with the rise of the civil rights movement in the 1950s would the situation begin to change.
After becoming president, Rutherford Hayes announced that he would serve just one term. He wanted to make serious reforms in the federal government. This would be easier to do if he did not have to worry about getting reelected. Hayes started by changing the system that employed people in government jobs. Party leaders usually had great power to fill government jobs. They used the jobs to reward loyal party workers and to increase their own political strength. President Hayes demanded that federal jobs be given to people because of their abilities, not because they supported a politician.
At that time, the best jobs were with the Customs Service of the Treasury Department. The people who collected customs, taxes on imports, could keep part of the money they collected. President Hayes took action against the Customs Service office in New York City. One of the men removed from the job there was James Garfield. Garfield would later become President of the United States. Hayes also banned all federal workers from taking part in political organizations, conventions, and campaigns. And he said politicians no longer could demand campaign money from federal workers.
Rutherford Hayes showed more political strength during a nationwide railroad strike. The strike began during his first summer as president. For several years, the nation had suffered from a serious economic depression. 3 million people were out of work. Factories and businesses reduced the pay of those who still had jobs. Workers with the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad protested. They took control of many areas along the railroad. They refused to let the trains move. The strike spread to other railroads. In some places, the strikes turned into riots, and the riots became violent. Some governors ordered their state armed forces to intervene. The state forces were not strong enough, however. So the governors asked President Hayes for help. He immediately sent federal troops to troubled cities. The troops stopped the riots and ended the strikes.
Another issue during Hayes's administration involved a railroad in the western United States. It was both a labor problem and an immigration problem. Thousands of Chinese workers had been brought to America to help build the Central Pacific Railroad. After the railroad was built, many of them remained. Most settled in California. Others came from China to join them. These immigrants competed with white workers for jobs. Whites protested because the Chinese agreed to work for less money. They said this kept wages down for all workers.
The white workers asked Congress for a law to stop Chinese workers from coming to the United States. Members of Congress from both parties wanted the support of these voters, so they quickly passed a bill that made it much more difficult for Chinese citizens to come to live in the United States. The bill said the president must cancel part of a treaty between the United States and China. That part of the treaty permitted citizens of each country to settle in the other country.
President Hayes vetoed the bill. He said the United States had proposed the treaty. So, he said, the United States could not change it without agreement from China. Hayes did agree, however, that some action was necessary. So he opened negotiations with the Chinese government. He won an agreement to limit the number of Chinese who could enter the United States.
During the administrations of Andrew Johnson and Ulysses Grant, Congress had weakened many powers of the president. Congress had become the strongest of the three branches of American government. Throughout his administration, Rutherford Hayes worked hard to strengthen presidential powers. For example, the United States Constitution gives the president power to veto bills passed by Congress. In the 1800s, Congress tried to prevent presidential vetoes. It used a method of attaching riders to legislative proposals. This is how the method works.
Congress considers a bill the president believes is necessary. Then it joins that bill to a measure the president would veto if passed separately. The extra measure is called a rider to the first bill. To get the bill he wants, the president must accept the rider, too. President Hayes refused to sign any bills with riders. So the Congress, during his administration, stopped using the method. Congresses since then have used it successfully.
Rutherford Hayes kept his promise to serve only 4 years. He did not regret his decision. After leaving office in 1881, he said he was satisfied with what he had done. He looked back on his administration and wrote, "I left this country prosperous and happy. I left the party of my choice strong, victorious, and united. In serving the country, I served my party." He died in 1893.
Hayes was right in saying that the United States was strong and prosperous. The late 1800s were a time of growth for the nation. They also were a time of expansion into new territory. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by David Jarmel. The narrators were Steve Ember and Richard Rail. Our programs can be found online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and historical images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.